44 minutes after the hour, America, joined now by former Speaker of the United States House of Representatives and presidential candidate Newt Gingrich. Mr. Speaker, welcome back to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Listen, it's always great to be with you, Hugh, and this is a pretty important day for the country as Congress comes back into session, and we're going to see what 2015 holds for us.
I am very surprised that two dozen Republicans voted against Speaker Boehner. Are you surprised, and was that a useful move or a not productive gesture?
Well, I think it wasn't particularly productive. I'm a little surprised the number got as high as it did. I would not have been at all surprised for 12 or 15. But the truth is, John got 89% of the Republican vote, and in most races, 89% is a lot. He was never in any danger of not being Speaker. Where it really became not productive, I thought, was two places. One, it marginalizes the guys who voted no. I mean, you know, you're in a conference, you've had a vote, you've picked a leader, everybody else goes out on the floor to beat the Democrats, and you decide you're not happy with what all of your friends just did. That pretty well marginalizes you. It doesn't marginalize the 216 who voted for Boehner. Second, it became the big message for 24 hours. So here they are, the very first day back. They're going to do some very good things in the near future. They're passing a bill, for example, about hiring heroes, which exempts anybody who is a veteran from being counted as a small business against Obamacare's limits. It's a step towards really encouraging small businesses to hire veterans. They're going to pass the Keystone Pipeline to help create jobs and further increase America's energy strength. These are positive, good things to be doing. And the guys who wanted to make noise stepped on the message and instead showed a little bit of a Republican disarray. In the end, it won't matter. Boehner is the Speaker, and they are going to move forward. But I thought it was not as helpful as it could have been.
Now, Mr. Speaker, it's also the start of the 2016. I talked to your wife, Calista, last hour about her brand new book and about the being running, because I had Scott Walker on to begin the show today and talk with him about Tenet Tarantino Walker and whether she's all in. I am curious about your assessment. I was very surprised to hear Mrs. Gingrich say Hillary's formidable and maybe the party needs to move to the center. Do you agree with her?
Well, I think the point she's making is you can't just take for granted the women are automatically going to vote against Hillary Clinton. And I agree with that. I think Secretary, Senator, First Lady Clinton is formidable. If you look at her numbers in the Democratic primaries, they're stunning. And I think we've got to be aware of that as we put together our ticket. We've got to realize for a lot of women, particularly younger women, there is an attractiveness to the first woman president. I think anybody who thinks that's not real is just out of touch with reality. So we've got to be careful, not so much about right versus left, but we've got to find a ticket and a platform that says to younger professional women, who, by the way, voted Republican in 2014 in much bigger numbers than anybody expected. A key part of our victory in 2014 is that we were doing very well with people between 18 and 35, much better than we have done in a decade. And I think we want to continue to appeal to those folks as the party of the future.
What is Hillary's greatest weakness, Mr. Speaker?
Boring. She's a celebrity like Kim Kardashian, but I mean, tell me what she's done and tell me what she stands for. I mean, she currently stands for the idea that it's time for her to be president because she's been standing around waiting for the time for her to be president. So she'd like to be president because, after all, I mean, she and Bill think it'd be good to be president. And why don't we make her president? Well, that's not a ticket. I mean, I have no idea, is she going to be different than Obama, or is she going to be Obama's third term? If she's going to be different than Obama, can she take the heat of disagreeing with the incumbent Democratic president? And if she's going to be his third term, do you really think the country's going to vote for four more years of this mess? I just think her candidacy has some big internal contradictions.
She sits down for like a quarterly interview with Thomas Friedman or Charlie Rose or one of the reliables in the safe interviews. Can she keep that up? Will the American media allow her to waltz to the nomination without actually having to answer questions about Libya, about Egypt, about Russia and the reset button? Does she get a pass?
Oh, I think to some extent she gets a pass because the elite media is giddy at the idea that there's finally going to be a woman president. Don't underestimate in these newsrooms among the elite media how many of them are not just liberal. But they think, boy, wouldn't this be just a wonderful moment in history? You know, we have our first African-American president. Now we can have our first woman president. This will be just fabulous. And it's almost like asking the question, so what kind of president would she be? And that seems to be, for a lot of these folks, irrelevant, because they're voting symbolically in their brains. And that's why you see the elite media pull so many punches with Secretary Clinton. I mean, your point, which is I think, very funny, we did research on this. I mean, the reset button story is hysterical.
Yes.
You know, they're in Geneva. They want to do something fancy. They actually get a button from, apparently from a jacuzzi. It's a red button. They then paint in Russian what they think is the word reset, which turns out to be the word overcharge, because their translator got it wrong. The Russian foreign minister standing here looking at a jacuzzi button with the word overcharge on it turns and says, I don't think so. I mean, that was the beginning that led to Crimea. That was a reset? No, that was a joke. That was Keystone Cops. It was the Three Stooges. And nobody holds her accountable and says, gee, how can you run a State Department so incompetent that your translator doesn't know the word in Russian for reset?
Amen. Now, I got to ask you, on our side of the aisle, the front runner is at this point former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, by a lot, by a significant number, in the invisible primaries of talent and money, and even in some of the polling primaries. How big of an issue is Common Core, Newt Gingrich, in this upcoming set of primaries and caucuses?
Well, I think Common Core is an issue if it means federal controls, and I don't think Jeb has solved that. But I also don't think he's particularly a front runner in the sense that Clinton is. You know, if your dad has been president and your brother has been president, you've been governor of what is now the third largest state in the country, because Florida passed New York. You're ahead in the name ID poll because, you know, we didn't have President Perry or President Christie or President Walker, but that doesn't mean that's worth very much.
Hey, can you hold on for 1 second, Mr. Speaker? I'd love to finish the show with you talking about this, because I do want to follow up on Scott Walker. I'll be right back with Newt Gingrich. Historic day as the 114th Congress gets underway, and the 2016 presidential campaign is already out of the block. Stay tuned. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. 55 minutes after the hour, America. Thanks so much for listening today. I began the program with Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. I'm ending it with former Speaker of the United States House of Representatives and presidential candidate Newt Gingrich. And Mr. Speaker, as we went to break there, you brought up Scott Walker. He's everybody's second choice, as far as I can tell. If Jeb Bush isn't the front runner, if Common Core eats away at the ground beneath his feet, or he gets into a knife fight with Chris Christie, where's the party go? Does it go to Scott Walker?
Well, let me say, first of all, after the Dallas game, he's more likely to be hugged by Christie than in a nice fight. So whether or not Christie gives him a big bear hug and that takes him out of the race, I don't know. Scott, well, I just want to repeat, I don't think anybody's a serious front runner right now, because the voters aren't even starting to think about this. And there's a long, long track between here and there. Scott Walker is a very attractive person, as you know. My wife, who I'm very proud of with her books with Ellis the Elephant, she is from Wisconsin. My son-in-law is from Sheboygan. We have lots of ties in Wisconsin. We did Scott's first big fundraising event years and years ago. I campaigned with him in October just before he got elected in 2010. We were with him again this year, or in 2014. His great strength is that he tells you what he's going to do, and he means it. And then when you elect him, he actually does it. And it was an enormous shock to the left that he actually passed the reforms he promised to do. Now, that is, for conservatives, a pretty encouraging distinction from people who campaign to the right and then sell out to the left. So I think that Scott's going to have a lot of interest. I think John Kasich of Ohio, who carried 86 out of 88 counties, is going to have a lot of interest. Rick Perry, who is the longest-serving governor in the history of Texas, is going to have a lot of interest. You know, Christie's going to be formidable. People shouldn't kid themselves. Mike Huckabee is going to do very well in the early round. So is Rand Paul. You get into caucus states like Nevada and Iowa, Rand Paul is very formidable. If Ted Cruz decides to run, he will be the articulator of the Tea Party movement. So I just think this is going to be And that doesn't leave you. Then there are people like Bobby Jindal. I mean,
well, whether it's a bear hug or a knight,
big country, and I don't think a handful of billionaires are going to be able to pick their pet candidate and force the party to accept it. So somebody's going to win this nomination, but they're going to win it the old-fashioned hard way. They're going to answer questions. They're going to meet the voters. They're going to be out there doing what it takes. And I, for one, couldn't begin to predict who that person is going to be.
So you don't think, we got 30 seconds left, let me ask you, whether it's a bear hug or a knife, does only Christie or Bush come out of it? It can't be both of them, right? They represent the same slice of the party.
Well, I may not be either one of them. I mean, I don't know yet. I think we're changing. We're moving around as a country. Things are getting to be different. You know, this is the age of the smartphone, not the age of the payphone. And we don't know how rapidly people's opinions can change. At this stage in 2007, no one would have picked Barack Obama to be the Democratic
well
nominee.
Said, well said. Mr. Speaker, always a pleasure. Thank you, Newt Gingrich. Stay tuned, America. I'll be back tomorrow on the next.